بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. So annual gains minus ma'une. Both everything in brackets and then divided by five. That is the amount of khums that needs to be paid when the khums date arrives. Now, here, there was a principle in relation to ma'une. Because whatever is not counted as a ma'une would automatically be regarded as one's annual gains. But the ma'une can be deducted, hence the equation, annual gains minus ma'une. But if X is not a ma'une, then it would be incorporated in the annual gains. And therefore, the khums payment would therefore be more than if X was deemed a ma'une and was deducted from one's annual gains. But then we encountered a principle. We called it the principle of unity. Only that ma'une can be deducted from this year's annual gains, which is used in that particular year. If you want to use the ma'une for a succeeding year, for next year or in 2 years' time or 3 years' time and so on and so forth, you can't deduct it from your annual gains. And the example, the common example was the fridge example. If you purchase a fridge this year, but you're going to use it next year, you don't need it this year, you're going to use it in the succeeding years, then that fridge would not be deemed a ma'une according to this principle of unity. And therefore, you shouldn't deduct it from your annual gains. And if you do, then its khums, the khums of the fridge, would have to be paid for. By way of example, let's say the fridge was £400. And you deducted the fridge with your other ma'une from your annual gains. And that which was left was £1,000 at the end of the year. That £1,000, the khums would be £200. So, but since £400, which was deducted, was not, strictly speaking, deemed a ma'une, that £400 has to be khumsated too. And that £400 has to be khumsated. And the khums, a fifth of 400 is 80. Why does the £400 have to be khumsated? Because the fridge, whose market value is was £400, the fridge was not deemed a ma'une. Why? Because it went against the principle of unity. So the fridge is not deemed a ma'une. So the khums of the fridge has to be given. Only ma'une, that which is entitled, the title of ma'une, can be deducted from annual gains. Whereas you deducted £400 from your annual gains when you shouldn't have, because the fridge was to be used the succeeding year. And so the fridge is not a ma'une. Now you're left with £1,000 this year. But in addition to paying the khums of the £1,000, which is 200, you also have to pay the khums of the £400 fridge, which is 80. So 200 plus 80 is 280. It's very early for mathematics at this hour, although it's morning here. I'm not sure what time you'll be listening to this. So the khums of that year would be £280. Let's say from the very beginning, you didn't deduct the £400 fridge from your annual gains. If you hadn't have done that in the beginning or during the year, then your annual gains at the end of the year would have been £1,400. And then the khums of £1,400 also is £280. Okay. Next, there were certain items where it takes a number of years for you to become the owner of those items. And it's not like a fridge anymore. And the common example is the house. And here we had spoken of different variations of how people pay for their houses, how they become owners. I'll just give a quick summary and then we'll continue from where we had left off. So there are different ways in the East and the West where they pay for houses. Until recently, in countries in the Middle East, and maybe it still exists to some degree in certain countries, with the monthly salaries you receive, or some people receive, so with this, the present year's annual gains, you're able to purchase a house. You can purchase the whole house with your annual gains of this year. Well, if that's the case, there's no problem there. Although, I have to add that this is only in relation to your first house. It's in relation to a house which is deemed as ma'one, because someone may get a second house, a third house, for purposes of trade, renting, business, and so on and so forth. That's a different story, because they will not be regarded as ma'one. And so the story of homes there is different. But here, let's say someone wants to buy a first house, and house is part of your livelihood expenses, it's regarded as a ma'one, a type A ma'one, and your annual gains of this year is enough for you to purchase it, and there's not an issue here, there's no problem. But this is a rarity, these are exceptional cases. It's not something which many people encounter in their personal lives. Another common way of purchasing houses, we said, was accumulating the building materials. So for example, in one year you purchase the iron for the building, the next year the cement, the third year the bricks, the fourth year other things, and then in the fifth year you put it all together and you become the owner of the house. The question here was that after every year, the building materials that you've bought, since the house is going to be, you're going to use the house for succeeding years, here, these building materials you're purchasing this year, when you're going to use the house in 5 years' time, this goes against the principle of unity. But here, Ayatollah Sistani said if there are two prerequisites met, then it's okay. And we went through those. It was A and B. I don't want to go through it all over again. And he said if A and B prerequisites are present, then it would be okay. And that means you don't have to pay the khums on the building materials at the end of each year. It's regarded as ma'one. Whereas Ayatollah Khamenei was of the opinion that if it's a common way that the norm, laity, common lay people purchase houses in such a fashion, it will be regarded as a ma'one, assuming it's your first house. It will be regarded. So Ayatollah Khamenei doesn't have A and B prerequisites. He says if it's the common way that people purchase houses in your society. Okay, so with Ayatollah Sistani though, you would have to pay the khums on the building materials, but if A and B prerequisites are met, then there's no need. But the primary course of action is you would still have to pay the khums on the building materials, but with those two prerequisites, it becomes an exception, and the building materials are deemed as ma'one, and there's no khums levied upon them. Another way of purchasing houses is that you pay monthly installments, but you're not the owner from day one. So you pay years and years of monthly installments, and at the end, when you finish the last installment, then they submit to you your house. That may be the norm in some places. So in that case, if this is the case, well, that money, it goes against the principle of unity again. So Ayatollah Sistani says, no, you're not allowed. The money you give every year, khums will be levied, unless A and B prerequisites are met, and then that money that you give would be deemed a ma'one. It's your first house, it's okay. But if A and B prerequisites are not met, the money you're giving every month at the end of every year would have to be chumsated. Whereas with Ayatollah Khomeini, the criterion was that if it's the common way that the common lay person purchases houses in that society, it's okay, and the money one gives every year, every month, every year, that would be deemed as ma'one, and there's no chums levied. Another way of paying for houses, this too is not very common, is the delayed payment. Especially in the West, we don't have this in relation to houses. We may have it in relation to laptops, where you're given the laptop and they tell you, you're the owner of this laptop now. But for the next year, for the next 12 months, you have to pay X amount. If you want to pay for it now, it's £100. If you want to pay it by delayed payment with 12 installments, it'll be £120, for example. That's delayed payment. Now, with houses, let's say if a house is £360,000 and over a 30-year period, every year, every month, you pay £1,000. Every year, £12,000. After 30 years, £360,000. Okay. But with delayed payment, you're the owner of the house from day one. But now you have to pay these monthly installments. Here too, according to both Ayatollah Sistani and Khomeini, here, assuming it's your first house, it would be deemed as a ma'one. So what you're paying every year, every month, every 12 months, and so on and so forth, will not be khumsated. This is your ma'one. But let's say if this house that you're purchasing is a second house, is not a ma'one, is an investment, and so on and so forth. Here, with this delayed payment, at the end of every year, which you're paying £12,000, since it's not a ma'one, that £12,000, of which you have paid your debt of £360,000, you've paid £12,000, and it is not a ma'one, that £12,000 has to be khumsated every year. That's the difference, if it's the first house or if it's not the first house, if it's a ma'one or if it's not a ma'one. So that is, now it's possible some people may have two houses and both are ma'one. As I said, for every person it's different. Every person's background status quo varies. Okay. And finally, where we ended in the last session is where people save their money. They're not spending it, they keep on saving it. And they're not giving the khums either, they keep on spending it. After 5 years of saving, then they purchase a house. Or after 10 years of saving, then they purchase a house. Is the ruling here the same as with building materials? Here both Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khomeini say, money saved has to be khumsated. It's not deemed a ma'une. And we went through this to some degree, and I explained something where I explained a scenario which happened in one of the offices. So here, with saving money, you would have to give the khums at the end of every year. And then with saved money, you can't look at it like we looked at building materials. Although there are one or two religious authorities, it's a minority position, that they deem no difference between money saved and building materials, for example. They say they both can be deemed as ma'une. Both are deemed as how to prepare for one's house, for example. But Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khomeini do not allow it. So whatever you saved, the khums of it has to be given at the end of a year. There's no prerequisites or conditions like with the building materials and other examples. Okay, so that was a quick summary of what we had covered in the last session. And then I received a question, and since the question is really, I mean, there are some questions I'll answer at the end of the session, but since this question is related to last week's session, I'll go through it now with your permission. It's a practical question. So the questioner has emailed and said, I am a muqallid, meaning I follow the fatwas of the rahbar, the leader, Ayatollah Khomeini. And I would like to know if my Khums calculation is correct. For the past 4 years, I've been slowly saving up for two purposes. So here, there's an aroma of the fact that here it's a she here, and the questioner is a she, that she has been saving without paying the khums of, so her annual gains are at the end of every year are being saved, but she hasn't paid the khums of those savings. This is how it seems. For the past 4 years, I've been slowly saving up for two purposes. One, pay off student loans, which had been borrowed from 2012 to 2016, and two, house down payment. And then in brackets, although we rent an apartment, the rent keeps increasing every year, so we find it wiser to move into a house if opportunity allows. Yes, the rent may go up every year, but your occupation and your salaries also go up every year. But then she says the saving is locked up. If you bear with me here, the saving is locked up. So what she's been saving is locked up in the form of a certificate deposit, which self-renews every 12 to 15 months. Now, you have to forgive my ignorance. I'm not very familiar with these different systems which exist with savings and so on and so forth, but I'm sure many of you are familiar with the certificate deposit, although I can guess what it is. But there is a window of time, like a window period, each year that I can access those funds before it locks up again. So that's the main issue that she has raised. Then she said, I had previously been told by a renowned scholar that no khums is levied upon this fixed deposit money, so I have never calculated khums on it. So there's a problem here. So that aroma that I was suggesting has actualized. So she hasn't paid. She just keeps on saving, accumulating money for the house. Exactly what we were mentioning. Is accumulated money, saved money, does it share the same ruling as the building materials? And we said Ayatollah Khomeini said, no, it doesn't. Furthermore, this sheikh told me that when the fixed deposit breaks, if I put that money into a house down payment, then no khums is levied on that amount, because a first-time house is a necessary expense, is a ma'one, which is correct. Okay? I would like to verify that this information is correct. Do I not pay khums on these savings if I'm going to put them into a house? So here, as far as I understand, I mean, you can always email the leader's office and they will reply to you. But based on what I have learned from the leader's rulings, is that these annual gains of yours have been saved without having been given the khums. And you've kept on accumulating these annual gains. And you've done it for purposes of buying a house, for the student loans. Now we're speaking about the house for now. Now the house here, as we said, according to Ayatollah Khomeini, accumulated money is not deemed a ma'une. So therefore, it's not looked like with the building materials. And so this will not be acceptable, according to Ayatollah Khomeini. So by way of example, let's say you place the annual gains in a locked deposit, and then your khums year arrived, but you're yet to gain access to that money to pay off the khums, You must wait for that window period and then free the money and then pay its khums immediately. In that window period, immediately get the money and pay the khums. That is your duty. So I'm not sure what the scholar meant here. Maybe there was a misunderstanding. He didn't understand what your question was exactly. It's possible. Sometimes there's a miscommunication. I've had plenty of those. Now, concerning the scholar's statement that he said, when the fixed deposit breaks, if I put the money into a house down payment, then no khums is levied on that amount because a first-time house is a necessary expense, that's fine and that's correct. Okay, but one would have to pay off the khums before the down payment. You want to give the down payment, assuming the khums year had passed. If the khums year had passed, once it's freed and you want to pay for a down payment, before you pay the down payment, you have to khumsate it, those savings. If you had put it in the certificate deposit and then your khums year had not arrived yet, but your window period had, yes, you can take that money that you've saved within a given year, not from previous years, within 1 year, whatever savings you can give off for your down payment. That's okay. It's within that year's annual gains. Otherwise, you would have to pay the khums on it. Okay. Then the questioner continues, as far as paying off student loans, I'm currently making the required monthly payments by a plan called Pay As You Earn, in which my loan is forgiven after 20 years. However, the forgiveness comes with a huge tax bill because the forgiven money is treated as income and therefore it's taxed. Therefore, I'm hoping to save up enough over time to entirely pay off my loan so the tax bill doesn't come her way. At this time, however, I have a newborn and a two-year-old, and with COVID around, I don't see myself going back to work for a long period of time. Should I be calculating khums on this saved amount, which is intended to pay off student loans? Well, if it's saved, yes. If it's saved, it has to be khumsated. That accumulated money has to be, the khums has to be paid off. But if you remember the handover process, if you explain it to the marja, if you explain it to your religious authority, they may take your khums and then give it back to you as a loan, and then you can pay that loan to the marja, to the religious authority over time, and it's very simple compared to the loans that you pay to universities and so on and so forth. Okay, so that was one. Now, the questioner also asked another unrelated question. With your permission, I'll just go through this question too, I'll answer this question at the end maybe, because it's unrelated to this particular point that we're touching upon. Okay, so I'll leave that for later. Okay, so now the question of mortgages arises, because this is something which now affects most Muslims living in the West. And here, many of today's mortgage schemes entails haram interest. Now, sometimes they may mention the interest explicitly when you want to sign the agreement or the contract, and in most cases it's the case, they write it's X percent interest. Okay, and sometimes with Islamic banks they avoid the term interest and they use other terminology, but in reality it's the same thing. They're just escaping with a loophole, and many of those loopholes are not on a par with the Sharia. One has to be careful here. We shouldn't just be playing with words. The spirit of Islam shouldn't just be spat at. Now, so with the example of a £360,000 house with a 30-year mortgage, for example, the price is the same, £360,000. But the installments, which was £1,000 every month, Here, though, these installments are £1,000 plus interest every month. So at the end, you're paying £360,000 plus the amount of interest which has accumulated over 30 years. Sometimes that leads to a very high figure. Sometimes it may even be, no, like £500,000, £600,000. And some people then say, well, let's make it, an Islamic bank may say, let's call it a delayed payment of £600,000. A 30-year delayed payment of £600,000. That's very, it's very risky. Because in reality, it's the essence is the same as this riba, the interest, which is happening with mortgages. So, first of all, one would be committing a haram act if they were to go ahead with this. The paying interest is haram. And this, what how it's related with khums is that the surplus added to the £1,000 monthly installment, for example, in addition to being haram, that in, and let's assume it's your first house, that amount of interest you're paying would not be deemed a ma'une because sins are outside the jurisdiction of ma'une. It was another, one of the other conditions of the ma'une. And so the khums of the interest you're paying would have to be given. That's another issue. And this is for your first house even. Your first house. If it's your second house, not only would the amount of every year you've paid back the mortgage, that has to be khumsated if it's a second house, which is not a ma'une. But the interest too has to be given. So businessmen who buy buildings and invest in buildings and then rent and do, they have to be careful here. They have to give a lot. Okay, now all this was if the transaction was executed optionally, i.e. there was no constraint in relation to going forth with such a transaction. Sometimes there may be such a constraint. Remember, prerequisites A and B of Ayatollah Sistani, maybe if you really have to, if you don't, your honour will be spilled, your honour would be compromised. And here, if you have to do it out of necessity, but you have to be truthful to yourself. This is the Imam's money, the 12th Imam's money. You know, 12th Imam, belief in the 12th Imam isn't an academic thing. You have to prove it in practice. Okay. However, the transaction that you make, okay, with the bank, for example, is a sound transaction. And that's one point, and I'll speak more about that in a minute. And also the £1,000, not the interest, the £1,000 you pay every month, that would be part of your ma'une if it's your first house. And the transaction you do, although it has a haram stipulation, that of interest, the transaction itself is still sound. Now I need to explain what I mean by this last statement. If you go to slide number 29, inshallah, we'll speak about it there. So, just one or two preliminary points. So, Islam has signed its approval to many transactions that had existed before Islam, such as buying, selling, loans, and even marriage and other things that happened before. Islam has signed its approval to all these things. Sometimes it's exactly the same, and sometimes its approval comes with one or two slight alterations. Now, in the domains of buying and selling and loans, Islam has made one or two alterations, because before Islam, riba and interest existed in the domains of buying and selling and in the domains of loans, lending. So Islam has come with certain, Islam has given its approval to buying and selling and loans, but in relation to the minutiae, it's given a few slight alterations, and those alterations are the elimination of any trace of riba, Now, Rebbe, one needs a course on Rebbe. One has to speak, you know, a separate course on Rebbe. And it's something which is a very interesting subject and has many variations and has a lot of implications today. But here I'm just giving you a very, very quick overview on certain aspects of the Rebbe. I don't want to pretend that I'm covering all aspects. So there's Rebbe in the domain of sales, buying and selling, and there is Rebbe in the domain of loans. I just want to define what Rebbe is in these two domains. So if you sell in the domain of buying and selling, if you sell X item for 2X, so X item for 2 of X items. So you're selling X, you're receiving 2 of the same item. Okay, this is permissible if the item X, for example, is not of the type which is sold by weights and volume. Okay, so for example, oranges, although with every society it's different, but in most societies, oranges are sold by the kilogram. If you sell 10 oranges and you receive 20 oranges in return, okay, so you sell 10 oranges for 20 oranges. This is Rebbe because oranges are sold by weight. So this would be Rebbe. Or like petrol, you sell 10 litres of petrol, in return you get 20 litres of petrol. Why is this Rebbe? Because petrol is sold by volume. But things which are sold in units, like pots and pans and other utensils and other things, here, if you sell X for 2X, that would be okay. It would not be deemed as Rebbe. So if you sell X utensil, and in return you get 2 of those same utensils, since X utensil is not of the genre of weight and volume in a given society, that would be okay. That would not be deemed as Rebbe. And there may be mystical rationale behind that. I don't want to go through that right now. Okay, so that is in relation to Rebbe in buying and selling. But when it comes to loans, the definition of lending X amount is, or the definition of, you know, the qard, the giving a loan, is when you lend X amount, in return, you receive X amount only. Now, either X itself or of the same price of X. Doesn't matter, but you shouldn't get anything extra. Nothing extra should be gained. Now, nothing extra, be it materially, like extra money. You give £10, you have to receive 10. If you get an extra £2, £12, that would be Rebbe. Or even abstractly, if you say, I lend you £10, you give me back the £10 after a period, plus you teach me something. That would also be Rebbe. So one was Rebbe in sales, one was Rebbe in loans. Islam has eliminated, has given the definition and has eliminated that and has deemed that kind of Rebbe as haram. And this Rebbe in loans is what we see in these mortgages. And therefore it would be haram. And if you go through it out of necessity, for example, with Oytullah Sistani's example of A and B prerequisites, if that really is the case, that is, it's done out of necessity, your honour will be spilled, for example, then that would be justified and there's no khums paid on the interest that you pay. But you have to be truthful to yourself. Now, the important point, though, is this, that let's say you go through a transaction, not out of necessity, but you go through a transaction. Well, there's a haram component there. You're doing something haram. So you have to think twice about doing it. But let's say you still go ahead with and do it. I'm not justifying it. It's haram. Okay, but it's haram because of the haram stipulation. The transaction is sound, but the stipulation of interest, of riba, that's haram. Okay, but the transaction is sound. Now, here, assuming a haram condition is stipulated, okay, according to both Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khomeini and most of the Maraji, although you're doing something haram by giving the interest, by abiding by the stipulation, but the stipulation will not compromise the validity of the transaction, the original transaction, which was buying the house for £360,000. The stipulation of interest, though, will not affect that, the soundness of that original transaction. But you're doing something haram. But still, the transaction is sound, and it's your house, but the amount you're paying in interest is something haram if it was done optionally. And don't forget, the khums of it would have to be given. Okay. So that was another point. Another issue is slide 30 in relation to insurance policies and retirement policies. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is, given the equation annual gains minus ma'une, all in brackets, divided by 5, is the khums you have to be paid. How does insurance policies and retirement policies fit in? Now, I'm going to give you the general principles here. And maybe you should be able to extrapolate the rulings for yourself by now. But I do realize, and many people ask questions about different forms of pensions and retirement funds and so on and so forth. I'm not very learned in relation to those particular schemes. But if I give you the general principles, you yourself should be able to extrapolate it. If you have a difficulty in extrapolating the particularities, it's okay, just email me, no problem. So with insurance, the money the insurance person, this is slide 30, pays you after the accident or the injury, that enters your annual gains. And this is due to the nature of the contract, the contract made with the insurance person. And it qualifies as an earning, so Ayatollah Khomeini would call this an annual gain, that which you receive from the insurer. Why would Ayatollah Khomeini call it an annual gain? Because he says this is a kind of earning. Why is it a kind of earning? Because he says a contract is made with the insurer. Making a contract is a form of earning. It's also a gain. Remember Ayatollah Sistani's criterion for annual gains. It has to qualify as a gain, irrespective of whether it's an earning or not. And so with a gain, what you receive from the insurer after the accident or injury would qualify as a gain. And hence, here, one will have, once you receive the insurance money after the accident or the gain, here, it's part of your annual gains, and you have until the khums year to spend on whatever you want amongst your ma'une, and that which is left at the end from that insurance money, at the end, when you reach the khums year, that would have to be khumsated. A fifth of it would have to be given, because we said, you know, a fifth of your what's left of your annual gains has to be khumsated. Your insurance enters your annual gains of the year where you receive that insurance money, and then you have until the khums year, whatever's left of it has to be khumsated. Now, let's say one passes away, and then one's family members receive insurance based on that contract made by the person who's just deceased. Their family members now receive that insurance money. Ayatollah Khomeini calls this a form of beneficence and not an earning anymore. After all, they didn't formulate, the family members never formulated the contract. So this won't be an earning on their part. It would be, they would be recipients of a present, a gift, a form of beneficence. So no khums would be levied upon it according to Ayatollah Khamenei, for the family members. That doesn't have any chums. With Ayatollah Sistani, though, the gift also was, again, and would enter your, become incorporated into your annual gains. And so you, if you use it, and or if it's money and you spend it all, so be it. If that money remains at the end of the year, that much which remains, you have to give its khums. Okay. Or if it's something which is not money, like if it's a chair, television, sofa, if you've used it, and by using it because you need it, that there will be no khums on those items when you reach the khums year. But if it's cash and it remains at the end of the year, X amount of it, that X amount, according to Ayatollah Sistani, would have to be khumsated. And then we come to retirement policies. Here, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, here the same reasoning is used for the what we said about the insurer and the insured. The same reasoning applies here. And the reasoning being that the scheme with retirement policies entails a form of contract between you and that other party, and this the nature of the contract does qualify as an earning. And so whatever you receive with retirement, it enters your annual gains, and whatever's left of it at the end of the year, it would have to be khumsated. And according to Ayatollah Sistani, the same applies a fortiori, because gain, if earning qualifies, gain would qualify a fortiori. And so in both cases, after the year, on reaching the khums year, any amount left over will need to be khumsated. Okay. Now I know the next slide is on shares, but we'll miss out on that for now, temporarily, and we'll start the next session, inshallah, and we'll speak more about the substance and essence of what we mean by the khums year. So that there we end it. Now, I just want to go through a question which was also sent. Well, if I go back to the sister who had the question who I answered inside the session, in the lecture, she also added another question, saying, in my understanding, the leader does not allow Sahm-e Sadat to be dispensed as one sees suitable, because the ruling with Ayatollah Sistani was, you're free, if you know needy Sayyids, you're free to give them the share of Sayyids, the share of Khums, which is for Sayyids. Rather, but with her understanding now in relation to the leader is, that rather a permission is needed from the leader's representative, who is not easily accessible at this time. The sister lives in America. So I know some very deserving Sadat, Sayyids, who are very needy at this time due to COVID job loss, who would benefit from khums. However, I'm withholding giving them the khums amount because of this ruling. Please advise. So well done for withholding, because it's not your money. It's the Imam's money, and it has to be spent correctly. So well done for withholding. If you want to help those people, you can always give charity and so on and so forth. That's okay. But when it comes to khums, a fifth of it is the Imam's. You have to be careful how you give it. So you did the right action for withholding. Now, here, with Ayatollah Khamenei, with Ayatollah Sistani, it would have been very easy, because he's giving you the permission to spend. If you know the Sayyids, do it. If you don't, you can always give it to the office, but you're free. With the share of the Imam, you would have to give it to the office, according to Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khamenei. But when it comes to the Sayyid's share, Ayatollah Khamenei has a course of action which is very precautionary. And the figures I'm about to give you may be renewed. So these are the last time I had asked that for those people who want to give to needy Sayyids who they know of, he says, the office says, that it depends on the amount. So up to $400, the amount they gave was 10 million tomans. But that's around $400. If the amount of your homs is up to $400, a third of it you can spend for those needy Sayyids. The rest has to go to the office, directly or indirectly, at now or in later. If it's up to 20 million Iranian tomans, which is $800, a quarter of it you can spend for needy Sayyids. The rest has to go to the office. And then they say, and so on and so forth, as if there's an equation here. Now, here, the reason they give this is because of the number of Sayyids they know, the number of projects they have, and they spend upon. It's like supply and demand. Depending on how much they spend, they assign these fractions. This was the latest that I had access to. These were the latest figures I had access to. If it's more than $800, you can let me know, and I can go and ask them. There's no problem there. So whatever remains, so a third if it's up to $400, a fourth if it's up to $800, and the remaining has to go to the representative or to the office, directly or indirectly, now or later. But another point which is unique, and I have not seen, because this, given the figures, other maraji have similar things. But with this last point of the leader, this is very unique. I haven't come across it. There may be other maraji, other religious authorities, but I haven't personally come across this particular course of action. It's not a fatwa necessarily, but it's a course of action. It's more on the sign of precaution. Here, he says that you have to, that much that you want to give to needy Sayyids, that third or that quarter that you want to give to the needy Sayyids, that fraction which you're allowed to, it must only be given to consanguineous blood relation Sayyids. So they have to be your consanguineous relatives. That's something which is quite unique. Not to any Sayyid which is not related to you. That's one point. And so they have to be Sayyids. That's a given. They have to be of a consanguineous kinship, like your first cousin, your uncle, or and so on and so forth. Your aunt. Or, and the other thing you have to add is, according to a general principle we have, you're not allowed to give your homs to your dependents. Even though they are your consanguineous relatives, you can't give homs to your dependents. So it's you have to give it to consanguineous relatives who are non-dependents. So that is the ruling there. Okay, and finally, there's another question. It has three parts. I'll quickly go through it. We haven't discussed investments yet. So we're going to discuss all this in time. And there are three questions. I'll quickly go through it. The first is, if I invested in property or in other sectors from the savings after paying khums at the end of each year, this means that the investment is from money left after paying khums, so it's khumsated money. Until this money increases, in brackets like profit, I don't have to pay khums. Now here the answer is, yes, since you've bought the property or invested in the property with khumsated money, there'll never be khums levied on something more than once. So with that original investment, since it was bought with khumsated money, there's no khums levied. But let's say the price of the property elevates. Okay. Here, the ruling is that when it's sold, only when it's sold, it may be sold in 5 years' time, the profit that the profit made would enter one's annual gains of that year wherein the property was sold. It would enter the annual gains there, and therefore you can spend it. And at the end of that year, whatever remains will be subjected to khums. Okay? But that original investment Homes will not be levied upon that, because that actual building was not the subject matter of transaction, as is evident from your question. And then the second part of the first part of this three-part question is that in most cases in investments, the money sticks for many years, i.e. you don't have access to it, it's not in your hand. And if I am getting profit monthly, in brackets, rent of the house, okay, so he's not selling and buying and selling the property. His main purpose is getting the rent. That's how he's making a profit. Hence the answer to the previous part. Since I am getting profit monthly, this will be account in my current year income. And Homs calculation with a question mark. And the answer is the monthly rents of the property that you're getting from people who are renting or hiring, that will enter your annual gains, and whatever remains would be subjected to Homs at the end of the year. So it will enter your annual gains. That's the first part. In the second part of his question, he says, if I invested in some business from the money after paying my Homs at the end of each year, means this investment is from money left after paying Homs, due to loss in business next year at the end, in brackets, at Homs date, the total money in hand is less than the previous year's money, and total net saving is less than the previous year's saving. Because of loss in business, I have to use money in the current year from the previous year's savings. So if my net saving is less than the previous year due to loss in business, should I pay Homs? Now, if you, like me, had difficulty in understanding that, because you're not very business orientated, here I asked the person to give me more examples with figures, and he provided me with a very good diagram explaining everything. That diagram is worthy for me to go through one day. But just to answer the person's question here, there would be no Homs levied in this scenario. And the third and final part of the question, he says, if I invest every month from my monthly income, the salary, in addition to the normal expenses, the ma'one, in any investment scheme. So he's investing with the monthly salary, the Homs date is yet to arrive. With the monthly salary, in addition to giving deducting the ma'one, he's also using the annual gains before the arrival of the Homs year on a form of investment. This means that this investment is from the money before paying Homs. In most cases, in investments, the money sticks for many years, i.e. it's not in your hand, it's over there, it's out of reach, it's inaccessible. At the end of each Homs year, this money will not be in my hand. As per my understanding, this is not part of expense, meaning it's not part of ma'une. That's correct, because it's an investment. So I have to count this as a saving, and 20% of this must be paid as Homs. However, the issue here is that this money is not in my hand, in brackets, no liquidity. I can only pay Homs from money, whatever is in my hand, please guide. So the answer is this, that assuming it's not accessible, okay, whenever it comes into your hand, okay, you must immediately pay the Homs of it, there and there. And you shouldn't wait for the arrival of the next Homs year. Whenever it's accessible, you get it and you have to pay it off immediately, because that money had the Homs levied upon it, because it was from your monthly installments. So when the Homs year arrived, you couldn't pay it, but the Homs was levied. It's like, yes, I wanted to give an analogy, but we'll leave the analogy for now. So in such cases, when you do gain access and you receive it in your hand, you have to pay its Homs immediately. You shouldn't wait until the next year. Note that any profits also arising from the investments must be subjected to Homs as well. Now, just as an example, okay, and here that question ends now, but only as an example here I want to give. Let's say you bought X capital for £100,000 without giving its Homs, because you bought it from your annual gains, And in the next year, it becomes £200,000. So 20,000 is levied on the £100,000 of the original property, ex capital. Then £100,000 was made in profit, of which £20,000, the khums would be levied of the profit. Because the first £100 of the capital is not yours, so a fifth of it is not yours, so £20,000 has to be given. Also, but you haven't given it yet. You made 100% profit, now you have £200,000. That £100,000 profit, also 20% won't be yours, on a par with the 20% which was not yours with the original investment. Okay, but in relation to, so 20,000 for the original £100,000, 20,000 with the £100,000 profit, now that, so 80,000 is left with the original property, 80,000 is left from the profits of the property, for example, of the capital. Now that £80,000 which is left of the profits, here those profits enter your annual gains. Okay, now if it's untouched until the end of the year, then 16, a fifth of 80 also has to be paid as khums, which is £16,000. And then from the succeeding year, all your money is khumsated. So in this case, for all your money to be now free and pure, there was an original £20,000, then it was a £20,000 of the profit, and then a £16,000, assuming that 80 remained, the profits remain until the end of the khums year. Okay, inshallah, that is clear. If not, just let me know. I think we'll end there. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.